This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here we go. It's final hour of the day.
Whoa.
And
jumping all over it?
Yeah, I was going to introduce it. I mean, he's taking Mondays off. He's cheating on us. He's going head-to-head against us. I mean, does he deserve the intro, Dave?
You don't give him Rocky Top, he's never coming
back.
Yeah,
that's fair. That is a fair point. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Sorry I was unavailable last week. I was out of town on assignment. So
that's a lot. That's a lot. We'll dock your pay since you're doing this for free. We are lucky to have you every time you join us. All right, let's. I know today wasn't great for SUNY because she slipped on the beam. But let's just talk about SUNY Lee and Reagan Smith. And let's talk about counting the last two Olympics. 14 medals between the two of them. 14 medals. That is just spectacular. And the numbers are great for the Olympics. The coverage is great. I don't think we can emphasize it enough how unique this is. And clearly, SUNY, the story of her overcoming significant health issues with kidney ailments and gaining the weight and having to do this so fast. But she's got six. Let's not lose out on Reagan Smith with eight of them total, including two golds this time. Just phenomenal accomplishments for two women from this state.
Yeah, and Reagan, you know, her two silvers in individual event went against, you know, her rival, I think, from
all-time
Australia, and great, great head-to-head matchup with those two. But yeah, I mean, particularly SUNY, you think about what she overcame and the fact that, you know, it wasn't too long ago she wasn't sure she was ever going to be able to return to the sport. And you're dealing with a pretty significant health crisis, I think you call it. And to get back to not only your health, but to get back to that level of competition where you're going against the best in the world and you know, one little thing is the difference between winning and losing. And for her to perform the way she did, obviously today didn't end the way she wanted it to, but that's pretty spectacular. And the other thing is, Chad, both her and Reagan went there with expectations, right?
Yes, I mean, good point.
They had a different kind of spotlight on them this time than they did 4 years ago. And so that brings its own challenges and own pressure. And for them to step up and win medals and perform the way they did under that kind of heightened scrutiny or intention, that says something about their toughness, too.
Let's talk about the professional versus amateur debate with two sports where they're individual sports, and there's been a lot of conversation of should these sports even be involved. And it was unique that they both were taking place yesterday. It was kind of like a French Open final was happening and a British Open final, quasi-British Open, because you had the final round of the men's golf championship taking place. And that's with just a phenomenal leaderboard, right? Where in the end, John Rahm has a four-shot lead, and he gags. I mean, he played horrible in the back. Scotty Scheffler, the best player on the planet. Scotty Scheffler shot 29 in the back, Chip. John Rahm shot 39 in the back. Okay, that's a good way to come back and catch somebody. You have 10 fewer shots. So that's going on. McIlroy's in the middle. You also have Tom Kim. Tom Kim has the medal, okay? He's from South Korea, or else he's headed to required military training. Okay, you want to have pressure to medal.
Think about
that pressure. So that is going on, and if you thought those guys cared about it, watch it. Watch the pressure that was there. Watch Scheffler on the podium crying. Then you had this sublime matchup again with Djokovic and Alcaraz, and it was just sublime, man. It was absolute brilliance. It was only two sets. It was 7-6. It was just such a narrow margin. And here's Joker, who I think probably ended the GOAT debate yesterday with Federer and Nadal, that he beat those guys as many times as he did. And now he holds off Alcaraz and the way he reacted. So I get they're all multi-millionaires. And there's going to be a golf event this week. There's going to be a tennis event this week. But if you don't think they care, you need to watch it. And if my choice yesterday was watching phenomenal amateur golfers or phenomenal tennis players or who I saw, I'll take who I saw yesterday every single time.
I agree. And here's why. When you're watching the Olympics, you have an expectation that you're watching the best in the world do it. And so that, to me, if you can put the best athletes or performer in one sport and you want to see that, to me, that's what I want to watch. And I never have bought the notion of professional athletes will not view this in the same way that amateurs do. I just think when you're it's so different playing for your country than it is anything that these athletes experience. And you heard them talk about it. And I don't think it's just lip service.
No, I don't.
Whatever sport, when you hear them talk about what it means to be able to play for their country in this unique setting, and I do think they get into – I mean, look at Ant going to watch table tennis. And
right.
What's these athletes going to watch other things? You can't tell me that they don't get into the spirit of what this is about, right? And so I think it does mean something more to them. And I like that you're seeing the best in the world on this stage and this, in this environment. And so I understand some people that still love the kind of nostalgia or the heart, pull that you have these amateurs that otherwise we're not going to see and hear about and know anything about competing. But I agree with you. If you're going to get to see Scottie Scheffler dueling it out with somebody on a golf course and he's going for a gold medal and it means something, I'll sign up for that.
Let's talk about Edwards. Chip Scoggins is with us. Tremendous columnist and takeout writer for the Star Tribune. Ant turns 23 today. He's on this star-studded team. When they played Puerto Rico, it was his day to shine. He had 26.
Yeah.
I'm still 99% convinced they're going to win the gold, right? And it's going to be fun. They'll most likely have at least one game where they'll be challenged. Clearly, they were challenged in the preliminary games. That really hasn't happened much so far. Although it should be noted, when Joker played against America, when Serbia played America, when Joker was on the court, his plus minus was zero. So it was a tie game when Nikola was on the floor. So factor that in when they get Serbia. But it would be very interesting to watch what this does for Edwards, for his confidence, for his buy-in on the other parts of his game. Because when you debate where Edwards can still go, he probably second half of the season, Chip, was maybe fifth, sixth, seventh best player in the game. It's it's another big jump to all of a sudden get to third or second. And we've watched it before with other Olympians. And it's not just the scoring. It's the habits. It's the buying into the other things. And maybe we won't see it right away. But, man, if Tim Connelly and Chris Finch could have designed an ideal summer for the guy, this is it.
Well, it's one thing to be the best player on your NBA team. It's another thing to be a star on the Olympic team and be surrounded by LeBron and Curry and, his idol, KD. And just, I think as much to be in practices with him, but just all the downtime that he's having around these guys who are at the pinnacle of the sport and have been for a long time and have won championships. For Ant to be able to soak that up and kind of see how they carry themselves, see how they practice, see what they work on, that stuff's invaluable, right? And then for him to shine when he's around these guys and be their best player at times when he's around these guys, how could that not give you confidence? So I think it's going to be, invaluable for his development. We saw that. I mean, the trajectory and the things that he did to change his game at the end of last year in terms of being a facilitator and understanding when to give the ball up, that kind of growth we saw just from him playing. But I think this experience, and anytime you're around, the best of the best and you get to see how they operate, I think he's going to be able to bring stuff back from his game, back from that and apply to his game. So I agree that he's going to be, I would hope, you know, viewed as in that next realm of the superstars this year, and I think he's going to elevate his game to that.
Now, you and the audience may have heard some ancillary sound there. I'm going to give you two guesses. Dave Harrigan, unfortunately, potted something up inadvertently, or I had the volume up on my laptop and played something, didn't realize I played it, and because I have my headphones so loud, had no idea what was going on. Which one do you think it was?
I'm going to say Dave, although I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear it, but I'll blame Dave.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah, well.
Sorry, Dave. I love Dave.
And no, it was me.
What were you listening to? Music?
I wasn't listening to anything. I was clicking on an Olympic story, and something else popped up on it.
He wasn't paying attention to the interview.
I was listening to everything. That's, you know.
Hey, Chip, kill a couple minutes. I got a thing I got to look at.
Just keep talking. I got to look
at it. Well, it would have been really bad if it was like Pornhub. You know, if that would have popped up in the background. I don't know. Might have been a good moment. I don't know. We're all about the clicks. What the heck? You know. All right. Let's put Chip on hold. I'll keep the volume down on the laptop. Let's talk Twins and also what happened today with Jordan Addison. Mr. Scoggins rejoins the conversation in moments on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I mean, it's 23 past 2, and I haven't even asked you the music theme for the day yet. We've been full.
A lot going on.
We've had a lot going on today.
You know, show premiered on this date in 1957?
American Bandstand.
That's exactly right.
Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Ah, that's a pretty good guess.
Premiered on ABC. It was a local program before ABC picked it up nationally. August 5th, 1957, the first episode on ABC.
Wow.
Dick Clark, all bands featured on American Bandstand, and it's quite a list.
Yeah, it is quite
a list. It's an amazing list.
Yeah. Chip Scoggins, when was your peak dancing moment? I know we've talked before. That's not your wheelhouse. It's not my wheelhouse. Harrigan claims it's his wheelhouse, but I'm a bit dubious. Was there one wedding, your own wedding, a drunken night in Knoxville? When was your best, if you were on the bandstand and you could be shaking the moneymaker, where you would have looked at your peak?
I would probably say my high school. I did choir instead of, I think it was woodworking, and
hold on. I thought you were going to say choir instead of band, so it was either choir or wood shop?
Or wood shop, or it might have been because of band, but it, me and three knuckleheads did like the side dancing to, what's the song, Ain't No Woman Like a One I Got?
That's
what's
great, that too, yeah.
Yeah, so
sure
we did
choir?
I didn't sing, I did the dancing, and it was... You know, I don't think we were half bad.
Not half bad.
At the time, I don't think I'd pull it off again, but I remember we had a pretty big audience, and someone was singing it, and we were, you know, you have the dancers off to the side.
Please tell me we have video evidence of this somewhere.
I don't think we had video back then, did we?
Yeah. Well,
somebody probably put it on there.
Artist rendering, potentially? Or? Sketch artist?
How come him and Kirk never got together when...
Yeah! Better dancer, you or Kirk O'Chains?
Probably him. Yeah. Probably Kirk O'Chains. He was in dance and choir,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Do you miss Kirk O'Chains right now?
You know, I got to say this about him. The last two seasons when Zim had left, he opened up and showed more of his personality.
That's true.
So I sort of liked his press briefings with us, that he sort of gleaned more of who he was. But I'm kind of getting a kick out of watching this little, I don't know if it's a quarterback battle, but I will say this about young J.J. McCarthy. I'm very impressed with his arm. He's got arm strength, and he's got confidence in it.
Well, let me ask you that.
You see some rookie mistakes, but I like what I see for him.
I heard our mutual friend, Mr. Barrero, the other day with Kevin O'Connell. And Dan painted this scenario, and I thought it was a very good question. He said he tied this to when the Seahawks signed Matt Flynn. You know, and he'd been a backup forever with the Packers, and trying to remember what he must have been. Rodgers got hurt, so Flynn played, and they signed him. Well, then they drafted Russell in the third round, Russell Wilson, and everybody assumed, okay, you know, give Flynn a year or so, maybe 2 years, and then Wilson, you know, gets a chance. Well, all of a sudden, Russell Wilson goes there and outplays him, and Russell Wilson starts. Do you think there's any realistic scenario where they signed Sam Darnold? I guess you can make the argument Sam Darnold's kind of a Matt Flynn type of guy. Darnold obviously was drafted a lot higher, but so far he's just been middling. But he hasn't had a team like this before. Is there a realistic scenario when seemingly they're all about patience? We're going to do this, what's best for JJ and what's best for team, where if McCarthy plays so well, not just in the games and practice, that McCarthy starts the season?
I would say not likely, based on everything we've seen, but is it realistic? Could it happen? I guess it conceivably could. My colleague Mark Craig thinks it will, or thinks there's a good chance it will, but I tend to believe Kevin O'Connell when he says they're going to slow play this and they're not going to rush him out there, and they want to do this the right way. And so now, if we get here 2 weeks from now, and if he's clearly outperforming Sam Darnold and they feel like he's ready to go, would they do it? Sure, I think. But they have to be 100%, you know, convicted that this is going to be the right thing for his development. He's ready, no fears whatsoever about how he would handle it. And so I don't know how close they are to that decision or that point, but you see the talent on the field in the limited team stuff that we get to see. I mean, his arm is strong, and he's pretty fearless in terms of throwing things in there. Now, again, he'll throw some, you know, he'll have some rookie moments too, but I also say, I wasn't there Saturday, but by everything you hear, Sam Darnold had a really nice day that too. He's starting to connect with Justin Jefferson, but the fact that they're giving McCarthy more first-team reps shows that, okay, he is making the kind of progress that they want to see from him. So, but I still, if you said, okay, who's the starter in game one, I still think it's going to be Sam Darnold.
I do too, but I thought Dan's approach was really good. And I thought, you know, O'Connell gave the standard O'Connell answer where it's long, great question, we're going to do this. I don't know if I really learned a lot at the end of it, but you know, Kevin will give you 2-3 minutes on the answers. Okay, Jordan Addison. A lot of people reporting, including your paper today, that Jordan Addison was recently charged with 2 misdemeanors. This is the stop by LAX, suspicion of drunk driving, blood alcohol content over the legal limit, Rolls Royce blocking the lanes of a highway near the airport. He has an October 7th appearance. If he's convicted or pleads guilty, he could face up to 6 months in jail, maybe a $2,000 fine, and lose his driver's license. As your colleague Ben Gessling writes, according to NFL policy and program on substance abuse, players face a 3-game suspension for the first criminal offense regarding alcohol use, absent any aggravating circumstance that would lead to further discipline. And as Gessling writes, he adds, last year, he was going 140 miles per hour. Again, the dog story that I'm not sure any of us believe. So what's your read on this? That it's 2 misdemeanors. It's the limit. You know, misdemeanors isn't felony. So I could see somebody think, well, it's a misdemeanor. But then when you look at the NFL side, well, that's 3 games. And if you're telling me, you're asking me, were there any aggravating circumstances, I would think driving 140 miles an hour the year before on the highway would qualify to me as aggravating circumstances.
Yeah, I would think he's looking at suspension. And there's just precedent, the NFL, that this is what they do. They give out 3-game suspensions when there's an alcohol-related offense. So now, would that be in time for the start of the season? Would it come, you know, later on because you have to let the court case go through? That we don't know, but I think it's fair to – to speculate that he's going to be looking at suspension. And, you know, that's he said on the first day of camp that, you know, he's willing to accept whatever punishment and try to improve and get better and not have this happen again. But it's that's the, you know, part of the frustration, I think, from the Vikings should be, and I thought that they'd be more forceful, is one, obviously, is he's dangerous, you know, that kind of activity is dangerous to himself and to others in the row. But just from a football matter, this is a tough spot for them, and particularly if it's beginning of the season, because you're not going to have T.J. Hockenson. So there's a chance you could have Addison and Hockenson sidelined for, you know, the first however many games. And so, you know, but I don't think he's going to escape this without punishment from the league. I just really don't. When you factor in the, you know, the citation that he got the previous year, as you mentioned, going 140 miles an hour and really got no punishment at all for that. So, yeah, this is just something he's got to deal with.
Thank you, sir. Great stuff as always. If you find that video of you and side dancing, please, please, please text away.
I'll look hard for it.
Yeah, I bet you will. Thanks, my friend. Chip Scoggins with us. Boyd Hooper, in all sincerity, no better media storyteller in the history of the state. Just he's that brilliant at it. Boyd is once again facing a significant health issue. Our friend Rena Sargentopoulos profiled Boyd on Care 11, and Boyd's going to join us in just seconds to talk about it here on WCCO. If you have paid any attention to the local news the last few decades, you know our next guest, Boyd Hooper. No one's close to him. It's just that simple. As a storyteller, as a heartfelt storyteller, and how he continues to do this on a regular basis for Care 11. The land of 10,000 stories, he has won Emmy after Emmy after Emmy. And anyone who watches can feel the decency, empathy, and professionalism from Boyd on a regular basis as he brings us these stories that show us hardship, that show us challenges, and that many, many times bring a smile to our face as individuals overcome what they are facing. Boyd has joined us before, including on stories and also on his health battle, when years previously he found out he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. And that led to significant treatment, chemotherapy, and bone marrow. You have on this station Jordana Green talking about bone marrow and what happened, what it continues to happen with her. And Boyd, according to the story I watched with our great friend Rena Sargentopoulos, Boyd was feeling great. He was working, and then one day he goes to the office and receives some startling news. And Boyd is back here with us. I genuinely and sincerely, sir, want to thank you for coming on. I wish the circumstances were dramatically different, but I'm glad you're here. Can you tell people and expand a little bit on how you were feeling, how work and life was going, and when you found out about the latest battle that you were going to have to face?
Yeah, thanks, Chad. I appreciate that nice introduction. That's very kind. Yeah, it was back in April, and you know, I think anyone who's battling cancer knows starts to become anxious any time that you have scans or biopsies, or in my case, both, coming up. And April 15th was the 2-year anniversary of my bone marrow transplant. And so I went through, you know, bone marrow biopsy, PET scan, and everything else that they do a couple of times a year. And I was hoping for good results. I was feeling great. But bone marrow biopsies don't lie. And the tests didn't go well. And as my doctor put it, my oncologist said, your cancer is on the move again. So the chemo drugs that I was on had stopped working. And so it, they took me off of those drugs, and it was time for the next phase of my treatment.
And tell people about that next phase. What happens now?
Fortunately, between the time that I was diagnosed and now, a new procedure, at least new for treatment of multiple myeloma, has become available. I'm going to be undergoing something called CAR T cell therapy, About 6 weeks ago, I spent a day at the University of Minnesota Masonic Cancer Clinic, and my T cells were harvested. So a little looked like a little bag of blood that at the end of the day was taken down off that IV pole and handed to a courier who started its journey to Johnson & Johnson, the pharmaceutical company. And those cells have been re-engineered, as crazy as that sounds. And I can't even begin to understand how they came up with this, but the makeup of the cells has been changed. And next Monday, I'll start a hospital stay. And on the first day of the hospital stay, I'll get my now re-engineered cells back, T cells, and they'll come back as cancer fighters. So they have been trained to attack the multiple myeloma. And if this all goes well, I will hopefully reach a remission. I did not after my bone marrow biopsy. That was after my bone marrow transplant. I apologize. That was a disappointment. I'd hoped to reach remission then, but I was still left with some cancer. So in that regard, relapse this soon was a little more likely. But you know, this is a different procedure. My doctor tells me that it, because I did not do well after the bone marrow transplant, does not preclude me from having a good result from this. So I'm glad there are smart people out there who are working in laboratories figuring these things out, because my situation would look much different right now if this technology hadn't come along just when I needed it.
Yeah, this answer and such a comprehensive, thorough answer, I could ask you 15 questions off this. Tell people how unique this is for myeloma, and how many people have they tried this for this type of cancer compared to other types of cancer?
To the best of my knowledge, there were other cancers that were treated with this technology before multiple myeloma. This isn't old stuff. This is still relatively new, but multiple myeloma for the last couple of years, it's been used. I can't tell you how many people have received it, since the story aired, you mentioned the story that aired on Care 11 last Thursday night, I've heard from several people who emailed me afterwards, who I'm looking forward to getting back to, who've been through the procedure and have had good results so far, which is encouraging. I've talked directly to a couple of people who've had it, and particularly I spoke with a woman in Milwaukee who was in the trial. And November will be 5 years for her. I was particularly interested to talk to her because she relapsed quickly after her bone marrow transplant as well. She got 18 months. I got 2 years for mine. November will be 5 years for her after going through the trial for CAR cell therapy, and she's still cancer-free. So I'd look for hope wherever I can find it, and I definitely got that talking to her. So my doctors are optimistic, and I'm choosing to be optimistic as well.
Boyd Hooper is with us. This incredibly familiar voice, his Emmy Award-winning work, Land of 10,000 Stories on Care 11. He's sharing with us again another battle with cancer off the initial diagnosis a few years ago of multiple myeloma, not getting to the remission stage, and then this diagnosis in April, as his doctor said, this cancer is on the move. I can hear the optimism in your voice. If you can share with me, have there been certain points when it's been harder than others, or are you the type of person who is able to stay optimistic almost all the time?
Well, I think anytime you get bad news, and I've had a number of those occasions over the last, 3 years since I was diagnosed, I found out there are different variants of multiple myeloma. I didn't know that when I was diagnosed, and I found out a few weeks later after some additional testing was done, I have a particularly aggressive form of multiple myeloma called high-risk multiple myeloma. That was, it's like, you got to be kidding me. There's something worse than getting multiple myeloma.
Yeah, right.
So you know, that, and you grieve a little bit every time you get a piece of news like that. When I didn't reach remission after the bone marrow transplant, you know, that's another time that, you know, my wife and I are just like, are you kidding me? We just went through this thing and find out, only to find out 60 days later that I didn't get where we wanted to get. And, you know, and certainly relapsing so soon, you know, I was hoping, you know, maybe 5 years, but, you know, it ended up being two before I had the relapse. And so I there was never a point where I didn't have some cancer, but when they do a bone marrow biopsy, they actually measure the level of cancer. And, you know, I was left with 1 to 2% of the cells in my bone marrow were still cancerous. And, you know, and on that 1-2 year anniversary, when they did the tests, it was up to, they said, between 5 and 7%. And, you know, and that's not going to get better. It's, you know, once cancer's on the move, it's on the move. And for those 2 years, chemotherapy kept it in check. So yeah, I've been going to chemo at the U every other week for the last, you know, 2.5 years, or since the bone marrow transplant. And that was keeping it in check. But those drugs I was on two different chemo drugs, they just lost their effectiveness. And, you know, that's just the reality of cancer, or the, particularly this type of cancer. It figures its way around the drugs. It's cunning in that regard. It figures it out, and it works around it, and eventually the drugs stop working. So, you know, 15 years ago with this type of cancer, there weren't very few options. Even the chemo drugs that I was on weren't around 15 years ago. So 15 years ago, you know, it was one of those, you know, get your affairs in order kind of diagnosis. And we've come so far, Ben.
Good.
My oncologists tell me blood cancers in particular, they are making tremendous strides right now. And this CAR T cell therapy is just the latest thing. And anyone who watched the story the other night on CARE heard my oncologist say something that just gives me shivers. She told Rena in the interview that she believes that there will be a cure for this disease in my.
If you have paid any attention to the local news the last few decades, you know our next guest, Boyd Hooper. No one's close to him. It's just that simple. As a storyteller, as a heartfelt storyteller, and how he continues to do this on a regular basis for CARE 11. The land of 10,000 stories. He has won Emmy after Emmy after Emmy. And anyone who watches can feel the decency, empathy, and professionalism from Boyd on a regular basis as he brings us these stories that show us hardship, that show us challenges, and that many, many times bring a smile to our face as individuals overcome what they are facing. Boyd has joined us before, including on stories and also on his health battle, when years previously he found out he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. And that led to significant treatment, chemotherapy, and bone marrow. You have on this station Jordana Green talking about bone marrow and what happened, what it continues to happen with her. And Boyd, according to the story I watched with our great friend Rena Sargentopoulos, Boyd was feeling great. He was working, and then one day he goes to the office and receives some startling news. And Boyd is back here with us. I genuinely and sincerely, sir, want to thank you for coming on. I wish the circumstances were dramatically different, but I'm glad you're here. Can you tell people and expand a little bit on how you were feeling, how work and life was going, and when you found out about the latest battle that you were going to have to face?
Yeah, thanks, Chad. I appreciate that nice introduction. That's very kind. Yeah, it was back in April, and you know, I think anyone who's battling cancer knows starts to become anxious any time that you have scans or biopsies, or in my case, both, coming up. And April 15th was the 2 year anniversary of my bone marrow transplant. And so I went through, you know, bone marrow biopsy, PET scan, and everything else that they do a couple of times a year. And I was hoping for good results. I was feeling great. But bone marrow biopsies don't lie. And the tests didn't go well. And as my doctor put it, my oncologist said, your cancer is on the move again. So the chemo drugs that I was on had stopped working. And so it, they took me off of those drugs, and it was time for the next phase of my treatment.
And tell people about that next phase. What happens now?
Fortunately, between the time that I was diagnosed and now, a new procedure, at least new for treatment of multiple myeloma, has become available. I'm going to be undergoing something called CAR T cell therapy. About 6 weeks ago, I spent a day at the University of Minnesota Masonic Cancer Clinic, and my T cells were harvested. So a little looked like a little bag of blood that at the end of the day was taken down off that IV pole and handed to a courier who started its journey to Johnson & Johnson, the pharmaceutical company. And those cells have been re-engineered, as crazy as that sounds. And I can't even begin to understand how they came up with this, but the makeup of the cells has been changed. And next Monday, I'll start a hospital stay. And on the first day of the hospital stay, I'll get my now re-engineered cells back, T cells, and they'll come back as cancer fighters. So they have been trained to attack the multiple myeloma. And if this all goes well, I will hopefully reach a remission. I did not after my bone marrow biopsy. That was after my bone marrow transplant. I apologize. That was a disappointment. I'd hoped to reach remission then, but I was still left with some cancer. So in that regard, relapse this soon was a little more likely, but you know, this is a different procedure. My doctor tells me that it, because I did not do well after the bone marrow transplant, does not preclude me from having a good result from this. So I'm glad there are smart people out there who are working in laboratories figuring these things out, because my situation would look much different right now if this technology hadn't come along just when I needed it.
Yeah, this answer, and such a comprehensive, thorough answer, I could ask you 15 questions off this. Tell people how unique this is for myeloma, and how many people have they tried this for this type of cancer compared to other types of cancer?
To the best of my knowledge, there were other cancers that were treated with this technology before multiple myeloma. This isn't old stuff. This is still relatively new, but multiple myeloma for the last couple of years, it's been used. I can't tell you how many people have received it. Since the story aired, you mentioned the story that aired on Care 11 last Thursday night, I've heard from several people who emailed me afterwards, who I'm looking forward to getting back to, who've been through the procedure and have had good results so far, which is encouraging. I've talked directly to a couple of people who've had it, and particularly I spoke with a woman in Milwaukee who was in the trial. And November will be 5 years for her. I was particularly interested to talk to her because she relapsed quickly after her bone marrow transplant as well. She got 18 months. I got 2 years for mine. November will be 5 years for her after going through the trial for CAR cell therapy, and she's still cancer free. So I'd look for hope wherever I can find it, and I definitely got that talking to her. So my doctors are optimistic, and I'm choosing to be optimistic as well.
Boyd Hupert is with us. This incredibly familiar voice, his Emmy Award winning work, Land of 10,000 Stories on Care 11. He's sharing with us again another battle with cancer off the initial diagnosis a few years ago of multiple myeloma, not getting to the remission stage, and then this diagnosis in April, as his doctor said, this cancer is on the move. I can hear the optimism in your voice. If you can share with me, have there been certain points when it's been harder than others? Or are you the type of person who is able to stay optimistic almost all the time?
Well, I think anytime you get bad news, and I've had a number of those occasions over the last, 3 years since I was diagnosed, I found out there are different variants of multiple myeloma. I didn't know that when I was diagnosed, and I found out a few weeks later after some additional testing was done, I have a particularly aggressive form of multiple myeloma called high-risk multiple myeloma. That was, it's like, you got to be kidding me. There's something worse than getting multiple myeloma.
Yeah. Right.
And you grieve a little bit every time you get a piece of news like that. When I didn't reach remission after the bone marrow transplant, that's another time that, my wife and I are just like, are you kidding me? just went through this thing and find out 60 days later that I didn't get where we wanted to get. And certainly relapsing so soon, I was hoping, maybe 5 years. But, it ended up being two before I had the relapse. And so I there was never a point where I didn't have some cancer. But when they do a bone marrow biopsy, they actually measure the level of cancer. I was left with 1 to 2% of the cells in my bone marrow were still cancerous. And on that 2 year anniversary when they did the tests, it was up to, they said, between 5% and 7%. And that's not going to get better. It's once cancer's on the move, it's on the move. And for those 2 years, chemotherapy kept it in check. So yeah, I've been going to chemo at the U every other week for the last, 2.5 years or since the bone marrow transplant. And that was keeping it in check. But those drugs I was on two different chemo drugs. They just lost their effectiveness. And, that's just the reality of cancer. This type of cancer, it figures its way around the drugs. It's cunning in that regard. It figures it out and it works around it. And eventually the drugs stop working. So, 15 years ago with this type of cancer, there weren't very few options. Even the chemo drugs that I was on weren't around 15 years ago. So 15 years ago, it was one of those, get your affairs in order kind of diagnosis. And we've come so far.
Good.
My oncologists tell me blood cancers in particular, they are making tremendous strides right now. And this CAR T cell therapy is just the latest thing. Anyone who watched the story the other night on CARE heard my oncologist say something that just gives me shivers. She told Rena in the interview that she believes that there will be a cure for this disease in my lifetime. I told Rena, she said it on the record, and we're going to hold her to it now, too.
Yes, yes. Last thing, and again, I wish you only the best. I mean, and there are literally millions of people who have watched you who are thinking of you, and whether it's prayers or however they're reaching out, they're sending you their best. With this T-cell type of treatment, which you mentioned starts Monday, have they let you know how soon they will know if it's reacting in the most positive way they want to see and hear?
Yeah, day 30.
Really?
Day 30, they told me they will, all these tests that I've undergone the last weeks, they will repeat on day 30. They have their baseline now, so the last 2 weeks I've been in and out of the U of M doing various tests, and at day 30 I'll go through them all again, bone marrow biopsy, PET scan, and they'll see how I did. And with any luck and a lot of prayers, I'll get to a point of remission, and that's the hope.
I hope day 30 is one of the greatest days of your life, sir, and I know so many others feel that way. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I'll be thinking of you. The people listening right now will be too. And let's plan on talking maybe day 45 when you're done celebrating the great news of day 30. and we hope it's just phenomenal news.
Okay. Thank you, Chad. Thanks for having me on. And anybody listening, if you've said a prayer for me, I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Boyd. I'm sure you can reach out through Care 11, too, if you want to reach out directly and send a prayer, send a thought for a very good person in Boyd Hooper. It's a 51 past 2 on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.